Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Focus on Albany. My guest today is the city auditor, the Albany city auditor, Darius Chanifar. Darius,
hi, Cynthia. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Did I pronounce your name okay?
The name is good. I'm the city treasurer, not the auditor.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
The city treasurer. So, you know, I mean, anybody who lives in Albany is aware of the fact that Albany is encountering some fiscal difficulty. So would you talk about the problems the city of Albany faces and how we got to this point?
Sure, absolutely. One of the I think unusual in to some respect cases in Albany is that so many people in Albany do have a real understanding of the financial difficulties that the city faces, even more so compared to other upstate New York cities. But the problems really go back decades, and it really has to do mostly with state aid formulas, both for our schools, which is not really relevant for the discussion here, but also for the cities. Albany's aid formulas were more or less set back in the 60s when our financial situation wasn't quite the way it was, but yet other cities in upstate New York were starting to experience more severe financial difficulties. And as a result, over the years, what's happened is the aid to the city, aid to cities in upstate and aid to city in Albany, there's a wide disparity between the cities. So Albany, for example, has about, I think it's $128 per capita in state aid. And compared to other upstate cities, it's far less. If the state would treat us like Utica, for example, that would make up the $12.5 million that the mayor is asking for from the state right now. If it treated us like Syracuse, Rochester, or Buffalo, our state aid numbers would be a lot higher, and we'd actually be able to make significant cuts in property taxes. But because ours is so low compared to theirs, we're at 1 to 6 compared to Buffalo. So Buffalo gets 6 times more of the state aid that we do. And that's kind of the genesis of the problem. It's been kind of simmering for a long, long time. We've had a structural deficit of around, you know, $10 to $12 million, $8 to $12 million or so over the past, you know, probably about a decade now. And the previous administration was succeeded in dealing with that problem largely through aid from the state in what we call the spin-up money, where the pilot, the payment in lieu of taxes for the Empire State Plaza, which goes on through 2030, I think it's 9 now, they spun up money from the back end of those payments and paid us on the front end. And that was a significant chunk of money for operating costs for the city and made up for the structural deficit that we have. The problem is the state stopped doing that 3 years ago. There hasn't been a plug basically to make up for that revenue loss, which is about $8 million a year that came off our budget in 2014. The mayor right now obviously is seeking some assistance from the state, and I just also wanted to mention that we had our fund balance at the city, which is essentially our rainy day fund. Excuse me. That was it moved up and down over the past several years, depending on how budgets worked out for the individual year. If we were able to save money through, for example, through attrition and employment, or other ways to save money, our fund balance would grow. If we spent more than we had for whatever reason, our fund balance would shrink. The Mayor Sheehan administration, when she came in, had a $16 million fund balance. But in 2014, $10 million of that $16 million was budgeted to be used for filling the budget gap in 2014. That's something that the Common Council voted for. That's something that 10 of the Common Council members voted for, to use that $10 million to plug the budget. There really wasn't another solution at that point in time. And that left us with about $6 million in rainy day fund for this year, well, I should say 2015, of which $2 million was budgeted to be used, leaving us a very thin margin for fund balance, for rainy day balance left. For whatever reason, you have to apply that to expenses, and we're going through our final numbers right now. But it looks like we're going to be around budget, I think, for last year. But we still don't really quite know yet because we haven't finished the final numbers. But the bottom line is there isn't much of a rainy day fund balance left under any circumstance. And that's led to inability to use that going forward, and leaving us about a $12.5 million revenue gap that we need to operate the city. And well, the management changes and the attrition that's gone on over the years in both the Jennings and the Sheen administration, it doesn't leave much more to do on the management side to achieve significant cost savings. So if we are forced to somehow come up with that $12.5 million to make up the budget, it's going to have to come through budget cuts, and it's going to be very difficult and painful budget cuts, and the mayor has spoken to that frequently. So that's essentially how we've gotten to the point where we're at right now. It's largely the fact that we can't operate a capital city without more revenue, and it really is up to the state, which owns over 30% of the property in the city, which is tax exempt, along with other nonprofit entities, that which make up a total of 60% of our property in the city is non-taxable. So it makes it very difficult to put those the extra costs that we have onto the back of property taxpayers, and that's why we have property taxes that are higher than other municipalities in the region. And that's something that we really, obviously needs to be addressed. But it really is a problem that cannot be cured locally. It has to be cured at the state level. So that's the long and the short of it right there. Perhaps a little more long than short.
Now, with 60% off the tax rolls, that places an undue burden on homeowners. So
absolutely.
Would you say that it is not attractive for somebody who wants to raise a family in Albany to buy a house and to live?
I think families, there's a lot of different motivations for people in buying property. For a lot of folks here, proximity to work, because Albany still is the employment hub of the region. We have 80,000 plus people coming into the city every day to work, more than we already have in here. So the city almost doubles in size every workday. It is the amenities that Albany has to offer. It is the schools that Albany has to offer. It's our schools often get a bad rap in the media, but they are really some of the finest schools in the entire region and in the entire state. The offerings at Albany schools are terrific, and it is a motivating factor for a lot of families to move into the city. Our tax rates, our property tax rates, for some folks are a motivating factor not to. People. Will make the economic decisions themselves. If they, the cost of moving out of the city, people will weigh that. If they work in the city and want to move out of the city, they weigh the cost of commuting and the time lost in their lives to commuting. And if it's worth it more for them to move out of the city, then they make that choice. It's certainly not an incentive for people to move into the city. If we were able to have lower tax rates, I think it would be a terrific incentive for people to move into the city, and we'd see an even greater inflow into the city than we already are. And we are seeing an inflow of residents back into the city of Albany. Our population in the city is growing for a whole host of different reasons. But our tax structure here is not what we'd like to see, and our tax structure for businesses is even higher. And that is also a real problem that the mayor has been dealing with, I think. And we've lowered our non-homestead tax rates over the last couple years, just a little bit, to try and get them equalized or closer to equalized with the tax rates for homeowners, to at least take that factor out of the decision making of businesses and choosing where to site their businesses. So. That's
reassessment is coming up very shortly.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of an impact will that have on the low-wage owners, low-wage workers, mm-hmm. and retired people who are on a fixed income?
Well, it's difficult to say because we haven't really seen how it all shakes out. I will say that our equalization rate is high, which means that it's higher than 100, which may not make sense to you, to listeners. But the bottom line is that our property overall is more valuable than what it's assessed at. However, that doesn't mean that everyone's property is just going to rise through an assessment. The assessor makes his evaluations on an individual basis, and he is literally going through each property one by one to make the proper assessments. And people have an opportunity to challenge us as well. But it's tough to say how things work out. I think it really depends on property owners in their own neighborhoods, their own parts of the city, to see how that affects them. And sales of homes and property around them is a component of that. But it's really too early to tell what exactly of an effect it would have. It's just you never know. I think for lower wage workers, a lot of them don't own; they rent, and how that affects it really is a case by case basis, because the factors that go into the rent that's charged are also diverse. So it's really too early to say.
And not everybody who's retired in the city of Albany is lucky enough to have a state or county pension. So these people are really strapped.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Again, because you don't know how each individual home will get reassessed. Some will go up, some will go down. You can't really tell what the effect would be. But overall, the real problem for seniors is that they are on a fixed income, a large number of them, and it is difficult for them to get by. We've held the line on property taxes for the last few years in Albany, so they haven't really gone up very much. But that's small comfort to people whose pensions and Social Security checks are also stagnant or affected by the cost of living, which always goes up. And it makes it even more difficult when unfortunate circumstances arise, like you need to buy a new refrigerator, you need a new boiler for your home, or something happens in the family, or your medical expenses go up. It is not, frankly, this is actually a little bit off topic, but one of the reasons why I've been a proponent of single-payer health care and become more of a proponent of it recently, because if we were to have single-payer health care in New York State, and there's a bill in front of the state legislature right now, that would actually cut property taxes by at least 28% to 30% in Albany. More eventually, if the state actually plugged its gap, its revenue gap with the city, it would do nothing could be more helpful to reducing people's property taxes than single payer health care. So, if we see that sooner rather than later, we wouldn't even be having these discussions anymore.
Well, you know, don't hold your breath and hoping that it'll get through the state senate.
Well, you never know, because should it change hands, that makes it a little more optimistic. But the other component, I think, and this is what I've been working on, is that we need to start changing how we talk about single payer health care and put it in terms of property taxes. Because if you're on Long Island, for example, or New York suburbs, you're getting just as killed by property taxes as we are up here, and whatever ideological framework you believe in or you come from, I find that gets tossed out the window pretty quickly when you find out how much money you can save. So focusing on the effect of single payer on property taxes, I think, is a real good way to change the conversation on that.
Now, it was just recently where there was an article, or maybe a series of articles written about you, that you had to borrow $12 million to meet payroll.
Yeah.
Has the money that you borrowed, has money come in that it won't incur?
Of course.
Okay.
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah, that framework that was being put out there by a single common council person is frankly garbage. And really, it undermines the city and undermines confidence in the city. What we did, we issued a revenue anticipation note for $6 million, which is relatively standard operating procedure. In fact, the county comptroller issued a tax anticipation note, which is similar, just back in 2014 to make its expenses at the end of the year because, as often happens, revenue comes in sporadically during the year to municipality. And our money for our state financial restructuring board money simply hadn't come in and wasn't going to be coming in until the end of the year. And we needed to issue a RAN, as municipalities oftentimes do, to just essentially get that money before the money came in from the state. So to say that we had to borrow to meet payroll is really garbage, especially when the council votes to use up $10 million of the fund balance in favor of that, and then you don't have fund balance left at the end of the year to use to hold you over for a couple of weeks until the money comes in from outside sources. So it really was garbage, and it really was just a really poor explanation for what was going on.
So by April 1st, am I correct in thinking that there will be a decision made on the $12.5 million?
Well, I would certainly hope by then. I think some people have focused on the fact that it isn't in the governor's budget, that the $12.5 million that the mayor has requested is not in the budget right now. Is that means that we're not going to get the money. Actually, I think there's a lot more optimism every day as the mayor goes up the hill to make the case to state legislators and the governor. She's really, I think, gotten them to understand that we're not just out there with a tin cup because we're not taking care of business in Albany. We're out there with a tin cup because we have a structural problem in the way the city is funded, and it starts with the state. I think their paradigm and their point of view is shifting up the hill. And we're optimistic. I'm certainly optimistic here. The mayor's office is optimistic about that revenue being included once the final budget is put together and passed. Hopefully by April 1st. But we've had on time budgets for a while, which is good. And hopefully it's done on time this year.
So as you know exactly what's going to happen. I mean, whether or not we're going to get the $12 million. Come the springtime, would you come back on Focus on Albany and talk about what either the $12 million means to the city, or if we don't get it, what that would mean?
I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what it means right now, and I'll tell you what it doesn't mean if it doesn't come up in 3 months. What it means right now is we meet our budget. That we'll be able to meet our budget, and we won't have to make significant cuts in the city. And when it comes to municipal government, we're not like the federal government, even the state government. 75% of our budget goes to pay people to work. That's what it is for salaries, health care, and pensions. And so that's what the money would mean. We can keep doing that and keep providing the service that we do on a day-to-day basis. And if it doesn't, then we'll have to make cuts, and we'll have to see what that is, come April 1st.
Darius, thank you for being on Focus on Albany.
My pleasure.
Darius is the Albany City Treasurer. So if you like this show or you have a comment about this show, go on Twitter, use hashtag Focus on Albany, and leave your comments. Darius, I look forward to, this conversation at a future date. Have a great day.
Thank you.
And thank you, everybody.
You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye.